Hey, we need your support to keep the podcasts flowing. Go to explorationsearlylearning.com/support to learn how. One of the big things you can do is shop Amazon with the link we provide. You buy your cat food, you buy your kids' books, you buy whatever it is you buy on Amazon, you pay the regular price. We get a small percentage of it. Everybody wins. A lot of people are doing it. It really supports the shows, and we really appreciate it. Give it a try. Thanks. Welcome to the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio. Not in studio with me is Lisa Murphy. How the hell are you doing, Lisa Murphy?
I am awesome today. Thank you very much. I am enjoying being spoiled rotten with the winter in Florida.
Oh, you little princess, you. On one side, you're in Florida, and the other side, you're with Floridians. So some of them, Florida man is like a thing in the news. So lots of interesting things there. So topic-wise for us today, Lisa Murphy, I've been thinking about this lately. I've been thinking a lot about loose parts. And I've noticed that in a lot of early learning settings, loose parts are being made less loose by adults who are trying to, I don't know, accomplish a learning goal or meet some standard or something. They're putting restrictions and kind of constricting what kids can do with the loose parts in their planning and in their setup of things. Thoughts?
So shall we call this, when is a loose part not a loose part?
Yeah. The not so loose parts? Yeah, I don't know. Have you seen this? Have you experienced this thing that I'm kind of...
My only loose part riff lately is that I've noticed they've become smaller. And I actually... What came to my attention is that some people were thinking that maybe they had become more of a collection than a loose part, and that kind of like what you said, that it's the teacher's business, it's not the teacher's business, but it's the teacher's stuff, and the teacher has decided that there's a certain time and gets quote unquote to be used. And I've had some conversations with some of the loose parts folks that I was concerned that it's more of tiny, tiny bits and bobs. I get a little bit more hesitant, but sometimes it makes the point. I think that a lot of what is currently being touted as loose parts is very fine motor, small motor, shiny, and would, if I had to choose boy versus girl, I would say that it's a lot more feminine. That's not good or bad. I'm just saying it's often my first impression when I walk into a regular/loose part inspired classroom is I wonder if we're intentionally leaving out some of that the male energy. It's small, and I worry that the kids aren't getting the value of the larger, and forgive me, but it's the more junkier loose parts. I almost feel like we have now categories of loose parts.
Yeah, well, I mean, part of it, there are books out there that are about loose parts that have very, very aesthetically pleasing photographs, but photographs that leave out a whole hunk of the loose part world. Lots of online, whether it's Pinterest or Facebook, lots of groups talking about loose parts, and the aesthetics of it are a big deal. And I think that's where the...
And they're beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
But I want to have... Let's instead of showing slides at a session on the kinds of loose parts you can have, that's awesome. Awesome. I'm not saying don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see pictures, real pictures of what it actually looks like, because I think one of the things that happens is that we go to sessions, we drink the Kool-Aid, because it's beautiful. I'm not going to lie to you. They're beautiful. But then what does it look like? Help me as a potential new practitioner navigate the reality of going down this path, because, you know, loose parts in a glass jar, little like sea rock all lined up with the sun coming through, that's a beautiful picture.
Mm-hmm.
You know what that looks like when 3- and 4-year-olds really actually use it? In some people, it's not as pretty anymore, and it becomes a big, big mess.
Or they might not use it because it might be arranged so perfectly that they're reluctant to touch it because
I want to circle back to the gender thing, because I'm sure there's a couple of our listeners. I am very open to the idea of gender fluidity. For the sake of this conversation, it was easier for me to make my point by saying the two camps. I just don't want to unintentionally offend anybody, but I think a lot of it is I don't know. I think, you know, I always think of my brothers. I think of all the Jonathans that have been in my classroom, and, you know, they don't need another box of shells. You know, they need 14 cable spools on the backyard and time to use them. And I'm not saying girls don't need that. I'm not in any way implying that. I'm just thinking a lot of what we still see as loose parts, it's the pretty sexy stuff. And I don't want to lose sight of the dirty, nasty, found it in the backside of a dumpster kind of loose parts.
The dirty, sexy stuff?
Like crap you find on the side of the road behind a dumpster.
The small stuff, I guess, it's easier to store and it's easier to put away and get out and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, just operationally, I guess I see those reasons to gravitate towards that stuff. But you are missing out a lot of stuff when you don't have the long branches and the bricks and the million cable rolls and all that kind of stuff. But I think we're also leaving out a category, and I think we've touched on this before. If you look at Simon Nicholson's original article on loose parts,
1971,
and in there he talks about, you know, we're leaving out lots of other categories too, because he talks about things like loose parts are variables in the environment, and he's not just talking about physical stuff. He's talking about concepts like things like gravity.
Yeah.
And the laws of motion. He's talking about things like music. He's talking about things like other living things. So when you start thinking,
go ahead. We need a workshop called The Lost Loose Parts.
I've actually kind of started. I didn't call it that, but I've actually started talking more about this, because we think about how the space changes when you create an environment where kids can play with gravity, or where they, I mean, the way Nicholson writes in that article, the idea of relationships in the classroom. Think when you think about relationships as loose parts, as your interactions with other people, as things to play with. And I mean, we all know kids are very good at pushing buttons. They're playing with other people as loose parts all the time. We just don't articulate it. We don't kind of call it that, but it happens all the time when you step back and look at it. And so figuring out ways to make the classroom more inviting to those non-physical loose parts, I think, is a way to get kind of looser in our loose parts play.
And realizing that, because this could be a huge leap for some of our listeners, so I want to give them a second there, but that things, you can have loose parts that you didn't purchase or that you didn't find, you know, that they're inherent to the environment. I'm also even thinking of time as a loose part.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't matter how much of that crap you got laying around. You know, they're only allowed to use it when the teacher says, go use it. You know, how does that impact the play and the reaction?
Yeah, I think a regulator on how adults, when adults pick something up and they think, oh, I wonder how kids will use this, or they only pick up things that they can conceive five or six ways or one or two ways the kids might use that thing in the classroom, when in reality, maybe we should invite in things that we have no preconceived ideas about how they're going to engage with the materials, kind of allows those materials to be a little bit looser in how they're used. When we come in with our preconceived ideas of, well, here's a spool and a cable spool, and they're going to use it as a table and they're going to put it on its side and roll it. When we start trying to figure that stuff out for ourselves, it does influence the way we present it. And when we kind of start stepping in and interrupting their play, if they're using it, quote unquote, wrong, those kind of things. And so there is that impact when we have our own preconceived ideas of how those things are supposed to be used.
And the comment I'll throw in there is that you could be the most authentic, like diehard play-based program and still occasionally find yourself not being as play-based as you think you might be. Right, because I have an agenda. Whether I guess what I'm saying is that even if you are that play based place, and you know you are, and you have been for forever, mm-hmm. that doesn't stop us from constantly checking in and making sure. Like we can't rest on our laurels just because of that. Does that?
Yeah.
Am I being clear?
Yeah, we kind of get in this. We're creatures of habit.
We end up producting the process sometimes without realizing that we're doing that.
Yeah.
Simply just because of an adult, just put it out there and see. Yeah, I had too much of a nap before we recorded.
Did I talk to you in one of the recent episodes? Did I talk about the kids in the rope, or did I just imagine?
No.
Okay. So I take the creatures for their walk, and there's a house not too far from us that we walk by on a regular basis, and I've been paying attention to how these two boys. I assume they live there. Maybe they just show up and play in this yard. I don't know. But one, kids playing outside is kind of a novelty in this day and age. But two, they're playing with a rope. It must be, I don't know, 10 yards of rope. And one day I walk by and they're trying to tightrope walk.
Oh, awesome.
Now, they've got one end of the rope tied to a pole, like a telephone pole or something, at the back of the yard, the alley side of the yard. And then this is like an 8-year-old and like a 6-year-old. And so the older kid has got the rope. He's got it holding onto it with two hands, and it goes up over his shoulder, and he's facing away from the where it's tied, and he's like leaning forward trying to get that rope taut. And then the other one is trying to climb up on a chair and then get his foot up on to this rope to try. But every time he puts any weight on it, it pulls the other kid backwards, and he's got to reset himself. And I had to walk by. We had to kind of circle around so we could go by twice and watch this. But other times, one of them was they wrap each other up with it. I've seen them using it as a snake. I've seen it just used to kind of mark off an area. They're like playing some little kick game. But I think one of the goals is you had to keep the ball in the circle they made with the rope.
Mm.
All of this kind of stuff with this fucking just hunk of rope.
Right.
And way too often, we as the adults come in with our stuff, and it instead of allowing these odds and ends to be more than, we make them less than with our preconceived plans for them. I get that. Sometimes, you know, if you've got learning outcomes you have to be able to document or whatever it is, I see that there's probably times where you feel the need to step in.
I would disagree.
Okay.
I disagree to that. I really do. I think the better that our professionals get at being able to translate what they're organically seeing, what's organically unfolding in the classroom, their actual observations, the better we get at translating that and linking it to whatever those standards are. I think you can still do it. I really do.
That's
really out of the loop.
And I see the need to do that, but I don't necessarily agree with it. Like you, I think if we got those outcomes we want to measure or document, we've talked about this before, our job is to become better observers.
Yes.
Translator. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Because when the vignette of the guys trying to make the tightrope, we could spend 20 minutes breaking down everything that was going on there as far as learning. And
that's what I'm saying, though.
Yeah.
We could.
Yeah. Exactly. Could. Exactly.
And I'm not saying we're better. I'm just saying we've been doing this for a while, and we've been doing it with this lens for a while. So you practice, right?
You practice, and you
get better at doing that. But I guarantee that if you carved out right now 40 minutes and wrote down on a little piece of paper this vignette that Jeff just shared, if you challenged yourself, I bet you could do one of two things, or you could do both. You could even just link it back to the four domains of developmentally appropriate practice. How does this story and all the little sub examples that you gave about like the kickball game and whatever, how does all of that link back to cognitive, language and literacy, social, emotional and physical development? And or how does this link back to some of the standards that I'm being expected to meet, you know, at the end of the day? And I know that we can do it. It just, I think at first glance, looks scary, overwhelming, threatening, and we worry, I believe, that it's not going to link up.
Yeah.
Like we don't trust the process. We're like, oh, if I sit down, I might come face to face with the fact that it doesn't meet any of the standards. And to that, I will say, just take a big breath and kind of calm down, because it doesn't mean that it has to meet all four of the domains of DAP specifically to that example, but I bet it meets at least one, and I bet it meets at least two, if not already three and four of them.
Yeah.
And I think the practitioners in the field need to get better and stronger at trusting that you're right, that you know that all of this can be linked.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a flipping of the script for a lot of people from what they're trained up originally to do when you start thinking about approaching it this other way. So I mean, there is some discomfort there, like we've talked about, and it's building up, it's doing reps and building
it
up
is.
Those muscles.
Building up muscles. Yeah. Do it again.
Yeah. So I mean, as you're looking at loose parts out there, people, look at ways you can make them more loose, I guess, is what the takeaway from this episode should be. Yeah, absolutely. Bigger stuff, not limiting yourself to physical stuff, figuring out how you can create an environment where kids can play with bigger concepts with the physical stuff you've made available. If you're thinking about the laws of motion is something you want the kids to maybe pay attention to, you fill the room with slingshots and catapults and ramps and vacuum cleaners and all those kinds of things that put things in motion, pendulums, all that kind of stuff. And so play with those bigger concepts, play with bigger stuff. I mean, back in our family childcare days, one of the favorite collections of loose parts we had was a bunch of logs. And I mean, they were...
Yeah.
I mean, we had a hunk of a branch that must have been 6 inches in diameter and 14 foot long. And the way that stuff gets hauled and toted and the dramatic play that grows out of that and the cooperative learning that grows out of those big bits is really important and valuable. And something a lot of kids are missing because we're not, did you just bark?
No, Kane just saw a squirrel
on
the patio.
Lisa saw a squirrel and started barking.
I saw squirrel. Let me walk inside.
What a loose part Kane would be on a playground.
Oh, a dog is a loose. Oh, I would stir her.
Yeah, and I mean, Nicholson mentions animals as loose parts. So you know, there's a lot, there's a bigger loose part world out there than we tend to than what you see on the interweb. So start playing with that. Anything else to wrap this one up except another bit of advocacy for bigger bits?
Bigger bits.
Hey,
could go down a whole different path. So let's wrap that up.
Can't go wrong with some bigger bits. This has been the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. I'm Jeff Johnson. That's Lisa Murphy. We'll be back soon with another episode. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.